What's up, guys? Welcome to the Behind the Deal podcast, where we explore growth through acquisition. Whether you're a private equity fund manager looking to expand your portfolio or a business owner aiming to scale and build lasting value through acquisition, each of our episodes will break down the strategies, stories, the lessons that make acquisition one of the most powerful paths to growth. I hope you enjoy. On today's episode of the Behind the Deal podcast, I had the pleasure of speaking to Ariz Dustor of MB Group. Ariz is, he's been doing this for about 8 years now as an independent sponsor. He, you know, they're buying lower middle market companies. They bought 4 platform companies, had a couple exits. So he's a very knowledgeable guy on the space in the private equity world. What goes into buying good businesses. We talk about their strategy at MB and how, you know, a lot of it relies on having a great operator already in place who wants to roll equity with them. We talk about the state of the current market, and then we share some war stories at the end about, you know, deals falling apart and things to look out for when you're ultimately looking to buy a business. So I had a lot of fun talking to Ariz. I hope you guys enjoy this episode, and thanks. Ariz, welcome to the show, man. Good to see you.
Hey, Joe. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, no, I'm happy to be here. I'm excited to learn a little bit more about what you guys are doing and also just, you know, kick off the conversation a little bit around the world of private equity, the world of independent sponsors, you know, what you guys are seeing out there. But before we dive, you know, kind of head first in, I'd love you to tell, you know, the audience a little bit more about yourself and MB Group and, you know, kind of how you got to this point and what you guys are doing.
Yeah, I run a private equity independent sponsor that I started in 2017 with a partner of mine. We focus on investing in family or founder-owned businesses, typically with anywhere from $10 to $100 million of revenue, $3 to $15 million of EBITDA, and we have a focus on 2 core sectors. One of those is healthcare. The other one is what we call multi-location services businesses, either consumer services or business services. And we're typically coming into these companies. We're very hands-on, you know, working with the existing owner and our management team and really focused on accelerating growth of the business. And then also working on a bunch of initiatives around just a broad theme of professionalization to help build out the team, the infrastructure, the strategy, all those things that they need to continue to grow and take that next step. And so we've been doing that as a firm for about 8 years. We've closed 4 platforms under this strategy, had 1 exit out of the portfolio, and really focused today on a mix of working with the companies we have in our portfolio, and then also evaluating new opportunities and, you know, excited about trying to find that next investment.
Awesome, man. No, I love the approach. I think the hands-on-ness is, you know, a lot of the time when people think about selling their business, a business owner thinks about, I'm going to be exiting, you know, they think that they're either completely leaving the company or, you know, fully taking a back seat in some capacity or just transitioning. But I think there's a whole component of the market who is actively looking for guys like you, where it's like, hey, I've taken this thing to, you know, almost as far as I can take it the way I'm doing it right now. And I need a strategic partner, not only to come in with capital, but to come in with resources, ideas, thoughts, and be kind of that, you know, hands-on person to help me take it to the next level. And it's amazing how many, you know, I talk to a lot of business owners and how many of them might not even be aware that that structure exists where they could sell a majority of the company, hold a good chunk of equity potentially, and then grow it to the next level and maybe even benefit more, you know, on that second sale than they did on the first from a cash standpoint. But a lot of it has to do with, you know, them just being so heads down on their business for so long that they might not realize what's out there. But someone like you who can come in and truly add that, you know, not only just a check, but real value, operational value, I think is super important.
Yeah, that's really our strategy. So we rarely are looking at opportunities where it's someone who wants to sell 100% of their business, or they want to completely say, hey, once the day we close that deal, I'm riding off into the sunset and not involved. Those are typically opportunities that we just pass on. And so what we've done in every deal today that we've done, and what we really like, is we love owner operators that have built something and they're excited about either continuing to lead the business, or maybe it's over a period of time transitioning into some other capacity, but they want to remain involved and they want to have a big ongoing ownership stake. And we, you know, those are situations that we like. And it's very common that we hear owners who really feel like they're excited about growing the business. They see a lot of opportunities, but they're kind of bumping up on what they feel like is a ceiling in terms of their capabilities. Or it can be a situation and or where they feel like they could just be moving a lot faster. So it's not that they might get to the same place on their own that they'll get to with us, but that they feel like they can do it a lot faster with a partner. And you know, what we always like to do, and we really target when we think about how we're underwriting our investment model and the types of returns that we're trying to generate, a lot of times we run that math. We want it to show that you're going to get more money in the future from that 20, 30, 40, 49% that you own than you're taking off the table today.
Yeah.
Because we're going to grow the business and we're going to unlock value. And we can really, we can sit down with an owner and show them how that happens. So that's really our preferred investment style. There's other firms out there that are open to like, hey, we'll just buy 100% of the business, or they have some person, you know, they have a CEO on their team that they want to go place in your business, and they're fine with you going off doing something else. That's not really our style.
So when you're underwriting a company, you know, you touched on something there. Obviously you're looking at the financials of the business and how it's going to perform, you know, how it's performing today, that performance and those projections might change once you guys take ownership of it. But because the current operator might play a pivotal role in the future of this acquisition, what red flags are you looking for? You know, when you're talking to a business, right? Like you're evaluating the company financially, but you're also evaluating that person. What good qualities and what red flags are you looking for in that existing operator that ultimately help you make a decision around whether or not you're going to make that acquisition?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think sometimes there's industry specific things you're looking for, right? But I would say positives, the things that we view as like very positive, I think one are having a really thoughtful and kind of nuanced understanding of their business in the industry. And I think in particular, having really interesting ideas around how to grow the business is one thing that sort of unique insights or angles is something that we look for. I think another is people who are open to feedback. So they want to grow as a leader, as an owner, a business person. And they're sort of seeking that. So they're asking us, you know, questions like, well, what have you guys seen in this situation? Or how would you think about this? And they sort of value that input. I think that's something that we really appreciate, because we want it to be collaborative, you know, sitting around a table, able to trade ideas, to, you know, have people be receptive to that. That's another, sure. I think another piece that we look at. I think a third is people who are fairly analytical. So, I mean, it's great if you're more of an emotional leader or qualitative, but I think people that can also really understand ultimately, like, what are some key metrics that drive their business? There's, you know, the ability to not just rely on intuition and things like that, but also look at data and embrace that. I think those are things we look for in terms of like red flags. I think people that are averse to any change, you know, it's not that we're going to come in and change everything, but over time, like, things will change and they're going to look and feel different. And I think someone who's embraces that and understands that and is not averse to that's important. I think another one is someone who, you know, another red flag are people who are maybe sort of micromanagers or don't understand the importance of building a deeper bench and a management team around them. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of times you have owners that are really just stuck in the day-to-day of their business. And sometimes they're seeking someone that can help them, like us, that can kind of extricate them from from that and build out infrastructure and a team that allows them to go broader. But if someone's sort of pushing back on that, or doesn't realize the value of that, I think that's another red flag. And then of course, I mean, look, there's obvious ones. Like, we only want to deal with people who are, you know, that are likable, that we feel like are ethical, that are going to be open and truthful. If there's something in their background or the way they manage conversations and a process with us that makes us think that they may not have those qualities, that's of course kind of like foundational. It sort of goes without saying, can't do business with someone that you're getting those vibes from.
Right. Right. So as part of your kind of initial diligence on a company, are you trying to spend a lot of time with that operator? And rather than just look at the financials, you guys maybe are meeting in person, going down there, going out to dinner, getting to know that person for who they are and how they manage. That must be, you know, based on what you're telling me, a big component to how you guys look at these things.
It's key. I mean, I think we either need to believe in that person if they're going to be running the business or have an important role, or we need to get comfortable with some plan that allows that person to maybe transition to a different role over time. I think without that, it is really difficult for us to invest. I mean, we may like a business, we may think it's, you know, it's got a really nice growth profile, it's operating in an interesting market, but if we can't say that, hey, we really feel like we can work well with this leader going forward, or find some other solution, I mean, in some ways, it becomes like uninvestable for us. So that is a key part of our diligence. And it wouldn't be uncommon that as we're going through our Monday meeting or we're discussing a deal where we have sort of things we're looking for, but there might be an open, really open, big open question mark that it's like, look, this opportunity is really interesting for us. We want to lean into it, but we're not sure about the operator and we need to go figure that out. And so we may try to, at least at a high level initially, try to suss that out. And then there's that next step of trying to meet in person and really, really get into it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You've sold the business. We'll
tell you, like, it's not, got a lot of instances where, you know, you get on a Zoom or you go get into a room with someone and sometimes it's like, okay, yeah, this just isn't going to work, you know, and you kind of know that, you know, that quickly.
I'm sure. I mean, I'm sure you have developed a pretty keen eye or keen sense for what might work and might not, you know, after doing this for as long as you've been doing it and, you know, understanding what it takes to be that operator, right? And what it takes to, you know, what it would take out of somebody to operate a business that an investor is now putting in capital into and looking to get a great return on that capital. You need a certain type of person to be able to carry that, you know, torch. And I'm sure you've over the years developed a pretty keen eye for like what that person looks like.
Definitely have some stories of, you know, meetings that go sideways, that sort of thing. But I think we have, there's some pattern recognition there. And I think there's some people too that are just as either leaders or even the business, it's just maybe not necessarily the right fit for private equity ownership. That doesn't mean that they can't be successful without that. But I think there are certain things that we feel like we need to be successful and that work for us. Other investors may have a different set of things they're looking for, but you know, everyone's not a fit for it.
Right. Right. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but you've sold a business yourself prior to MB, right?
I was involved with a startup that, I'd run for several years with a set of partners, and we did end up selling that. It wasn't a private equity like sale where it was, cash flowing, kind of business in that sense. It was more of a talent technology acquisition, of a software company.
But you've been an operator, you know, and grown something, you know, from startup to exit. How do you leverage that experience when you're talking to owners? Do you, you know, does it, I'm sure that helps a little bit, you know, being able, having sat maybe in their shoes before.
Yeah, I think I wouldn't oversell it, but I think there's an appreciation for it's really hard operating a business. And I think it's doubly hard to start something from scratch. So I have a lot of respect for the the challenge that comes with that. Particularly, I think just emotionally, how hard it is to start something from scratch. Mm-hmm. And I do think like something that I've learned from that experience and that I try to bring to our firm, and it's just this sort of an element of hustle, in terms of getting things done, finding creative ways to get things done, not being regimented in how we do things, and sometimes not taking no for an answer, which I think are all things you have to do as an entrepreneur.
Yeah, I mean, it takes so much grit to just keep going. You know, it's one of those things where like every day brings its own unique challenges, but every quarter brings its own unique challenges. Every year brings its own unique challenges that a business is going to face. And that operator has to be, even though, their goal might be to continue to get themselves further and further removed from some of the daily challenges and decisions, you never know what's going to hit you, especially in a multi-location, type of business, service business, where those take, employees, those take managers, those take kind of running a blueprint. But you're dealing with human beings and you're dealing with, other people who you have to rely on to provide that service at a high level. And man, does that come with challenges? I prior to doing DealGen, had a company that we were a storage business. We did a lot of commercial storage, but we did logistics too. So we'd have guys on trucks and warehouses and, dealing with laborers. And yeah, I mean, every day was a different thing that was coming up. If we had a smooth day, it was like a miracle.
Yeah. And I think some of the most operationally intensive businesses that we deal with are all, it's always around ones where there's a lot of labor operations, where you have a lot of, you have sort of hourly or just kind of like a large distributed workforce for the business. I think just managing people smoothly and all the things that come with that are, it's a constant challenge. And I mean, it really requires someone that's in the weeds and is super dialed in.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, in my conversations, at least with private equity funds, independent sponsors, I haven't seen anybody really having a record year this year from a closing standpoint, getting deals done and over the finish line. And I there's a number of factors that might go into that, but I guess in your opinion, why have things felt a little bit slower within the market this year overall? The different reasons that, maybe a number of different funds are saying kind of the same thing, which is like, yeah, we've done a few bolt-ons this year, but we haven't really done a platform company investment. I'm hearing that over and over again, and I'm curious to hear from your point of view.
I haven't looked at the latest kind of deal market data, so I suspect this has been an okay, perhaps not a great year for M&A and private equity. And the devil's always in the details. Sometimes you have high transaction volume, you have high transaction dollars because you've had some really large, you have had this year some really large deals announced to drive kind of dollar volume. But then, in terms of number of deals, the vast majority of the private equity market every year is in sort of the lower middle market. So I need to look at that data to maybe give a more nuanced answer. But I think it's been, there's been a lot that's happened this year. I think there was a lot of optimism heading into 2025. Yes. With the new administration coming in. I think, we'd been under this new interest rate regime for 2 years. I think the market was just, it felt like there were more of a closing of the gap, bid-ask spread between buyers and sellers coming into the year. I think to start the year, you had kind of this major shock, for lack of a better word, which is around the tariff policy. And, I would say less of an effect on our business. The sectors we focus on, like healthcare, for the most part, not really impacted by that, at least directly. But if you imagine you're an industrial, manufacturer or someone like that that's getting inputs from abroad, a ton of people have had a lot of challenges dealing with that. And so I think that's been a major, that really slowed the market down earlier this year as people were wondering what was going to happen. I think that seems to have like at least settled to some extent, where people are getting comfortable with that. But I think as we've sort of entered into the back half of the year, there's been a lot of signals around like some softening in the economy. I think there's a number of data points you could look at to show that. So I think there's just been kind of these mixed signals. Having said that, I think you've had a lot of sellers who maybe were waiting and have waited on the sidelines, and eventually, you know, they've kind of come off. And so you've seen some of that in the other direction that's been helping the market. So, you know, but there's a lot of buyers out there, a lot of people looking to transact. That's for sure.
It's very competitive. I think it's very competitive from a buyer standpoint. There's a lot of new funds, sponsors, search funds popping up all the time and, you know, crowding the market in a way. But, and at the same time, I think there's, because of, you know, there was some stagnation there for a while over the last few years, there's a lot of smaller deals that are now being represented by bankers, you know, deals that maybe a banker wouldn't have touched, you know, 2 or 3 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, but is, you know, it's a company doing 2 million of EBITDA, 3 million of EBITDA that's running a full process, you know, that, and it's going out to everybody and creating that competition. And there's like finding the good proprietary stuff, I think has just gotten a little bit harder, and there's more people out there asking every day. From my point of view too, like it's, you know, it's only gotten noisier, right? I mean, there's only so many different ways that you can meet a business owner in a proprietary way, especially if you don't live right down the street from them or in the same state. I mean, obviously you can drive and knock on the door, but you know, you can call them, you can email them, you can hit them on LinkedIn, you can send them mail. But if everyone's always doing that, you know, it creates this feeling of like spam. And, you know, everyone and people, sure. Some people are reaching out with real value. Like, hey, we've built a thesis in this space, or we own a company in this space, and we've identified you as a potential part of that. Like you could, we want to join forces. We want to talk to you. We want to give you money. We want to buy your company. I'm real. I'm not AI. And then there's other people who are, you know, reaching out, trying to buy their first business, or reaching out on behalf of a fund, you know, and, or there, you know, now there's marketing agencies that are kind of disguising themselves as buy side deal origination and reaching out and trying to, you know, book appointments. And so for the sellers, if you own anything that's remotely, you know, a decent company or of decent size, you're getting hit from every angle, you know, by bankers, by buyers. And it's just creating a lot, it's making it, even though there's probably more options today to get in front of a founder than there ever has been through technology, it's harder to really get in front of them because they're just becoming numb to the noise.
For sure. I think one of the key, if you were to ask me what are the key trends that are affecting our business over the last couple of years, I mean, near the top of the list would just be this rise in, it's more competitive. There's a lot more potential buyers out there. And I think that creates a lot of noise. I mean, some of those buyers are serious. You know, they're new funds, they're funds that are moving down market. They are very credible, attractive independent sponsors. You have, I think, some really smart people pursuing search funds, which is kind of a little different model. But then on the flip side, I think you have people that have come into the market as well that are don't really know what they're doing, or just looking for any kind of business. They're desperate to get something done. And so I think if you're a business owner, in some ways, this is great, right? You have maybe more options for people pursuing you. On the other hand, to your point, I think it creates a lot more noise. That makes it hard for serious buyers, which I'd like to think we're one of those, to kind of get through. So we have to find other avenues to talk to those business owners. And I think it maybe changes your strategy a little bit too as a business owner in terms of what you're doing.
Yeah. I mean, I feel bad almost in some ways, like these guys, you know, they have, well, I shouldn't say I feel bad. I mean, there are, you know, I am a believer in using someone to help you sell your business, you know, or at least getting some sort of help, whether it's, even if it's just an M&A attorney, you know, to get you through a transaction. But at the same time, a good investment banker can add a lot of value and earn their fee, you know, through the value that they create, right, for that transaction. So I think that there's 100%. A lot of opportunity out there for people to, you know, businesses that otherwise may not have had the opportunity to work with a decent, reputable, you know, lower middle market bank, that, you know, those folks are looking for deals, you know, more than ever now too. So you have the opportunity to go, you know, work with somebody and, but I also just feel bad. Like, you know, I've talked to people who have sub $1 million EBITDA companies and they're like, man, you're like the fifth person that's called this week, you know, about trying to buy our company. And like, one, I'm not ready to sell. Two, I know that I have to grow more to get the real value out of this thing that I want to. So it's like, I mean, I feel bad for, you know, that they're having to, not that they're having to deal with that, but at the same time, like trying to figure out who's real and who isn't, you know? And then the last thing you want to do more than anything is get involved with someone who isn't real, who isn't that quality buyer, who is reaching out to you, trying to buy their first business and they don't even maybe have the capital committed. And now you've gone down this road, you've wasted 4 to 6 months and they can't, you know, you've done your part to try to get everything aligned to get a deal done and they can't deliver. And that can be a brutal thing too.
We've definitely seen that. I mean, you definitely have. I think you just got to be careful. I think if I was a business owner, what would I be doing? I mean, I think the first thing I'd say is like, you're getting all these people that are maybe approaching you. Maybe some are serious, some are not. You don't have to sell your business, you know?
No.
There's no reason you have to sell your business. You have to do it now. That goes without saying. But I think if you're interested or it's something you want to entertain or you want to learn more about, I think talking to some credible buyers, understanding the universe, there's nothing wrong with that. And yeah. I do think, I mean, maybe it's not always in our own interest, but I think getting high quality, some type of high quality representation is ultimately, I think, like very helpful as a business owner. I mean, you sell your business once, maybe if you're lucky, you do it a couple times in a, you know, 40 year career. You start a couple of businesses and you sell them. So it's, there's a lot that goes into it, into doing it right. And so, I mean, it's like anything else in life. You know, if you were trying to sell your house or, we're going through a divorce or something like that. Right, that it's only something that happens occasionally. Like you would look for expertise, you look for people that do this for a living. And so I think when you think about selling your business, it's no different. I think probably the worst thing you can do, and we see this is as a business owner, is actually getting the wrong advisor. I think that can really muck up. It can muck up the process, but also just leave a ton of value on the table.
Definitely.
So
it's like hiring a lawyer.
That's something you want to avoid.
I completely agree. You know, and some people understand that hiring, you know, their cousin's buddy who's a defense attorney as their M&A attorney, they try to do that and they think that's like saving them a buck. You know, but at the end of the day, it's costing you so much more by not using someone that like eats, sleeps, and breathes M&A and does this every single day. You still there, Reese?
I am. I don't know. My screen's gone blank. I don't know why.
Yeah, no, all good. All good. Just wanted to check in. All right. We're back. You were paused there for a second. Well, we can edit this stuff out too.
I think like if you've been doing this long enough, you all have stories of, attorney that gets, it's a real estate attorney that gets hired by a seller to represent their business, or it's a general attorney. And I think it can be really problematic. I mean, to the point where it can be the difference between getting a deal done or not getting done. And so I would always caution a business owner, get real advisors. It's going to help you. It helps us. We welcome it. Welcome the other side having like high quality advisors, representation involved. I think ultimately it more often than not is going to more than pay for itself.
Completely agree. Before I let you go, give me a good, and by good, I mean like juicy deal falling apart or like meeting going awry story that you've had, you know, in your history, maybe something that like, the founder did, or, you know, just, I feel like I'm always, in my short career, have experienced quite a few good ones. So I'm always interested to hear other people's.
We had one interesting that you mentioned this, Joe. We had a meeting recently with a seller. They'd hired a reputable investment bank. We'd submitted an IOI. We'd kind of gone through you know, our initial diligence process, and we were doing a management meeting. The management meeting was it was virtual. It was a full meeting. I mean, it was scheduled for like 3 or 4 hours. And I remember it was like the first 10 minutes of the meeting, you know, people show up on the Zoom, and there was someone that had shown up who I don't think we'd seen their name or something in the materials, but it was sort of the general manager of the business, who was ultimately who we were thinking was going to run this going forward. And, you know, we were excited to meet them and understand their capabilities and all of that. In the first 10 minutes of the meeting, I mean, I Googled the person's name, and I think it was like the number 2 or 3 hit that came up was an article about someone who'd gone to prison for, I think it was a couple of years. It was like 3 years for wire fraud.
Oh, wow.
or check fraud. And this was the person that was sort of the designated CEO in waiting. And then, you know, still did the whole meeting, but this was going through our head the whole time. And you're kind of just trying to understand what's this person's relationship and everything. And then I remember after the meeting, you had followed up with the banker and discussed this, but also was looking online more, doing more research. And there's another article about how this person, I think a couple of years later, had gotten a felony charge for drug trafficking. And this was all in local newspapers and everything, which is why there were articles and everything about this.
Wow.
So it was, and it was news to the banker. I think they ended up pulling it from the market. So it was my learning there, and I've seen this a lot. It's just a quick, literally Googling quick information on a business, looking at reviews, looking at any public information that's out there. I mean, I've always been surprised at what I'll find, and can give you a really good sense for some things to watch out for or positives, you know.
It can, So. And it gives you, you know, it's one of those things where like in hindsight, it might seem like, well, how didn't I see that? You know, if you let it slip through the cracks, you know, and you're like, but people don't think to do that. They don't think to maybe just hop on Google. Like there's so much information now out there about everybody. I mean, we had a guy, and I'll share this with you, who literally faked his customer calls. Like, we got to the point where the buyer, where he was supposed to do customer calls, you know, they wanted to talk to a couple customers of the company. They wanted to talk to like 10. The guy had over 100. And he hopped on and posed as a customer in the middle of a...
I mean, that's crazy. That's like seriously, I don't know.
That's serious sociopathic fraud.
Or whatever. it's serious fraud. I mean, I think there were some, there was a case recently, it was a venture investment or something, but I think you had a similar thing where the COO or someone was trying to do something similar, where they were actually trying to pose as one of the customers, and it ended up, I think going into like criminal charges and everything.
Crazy. It's crazy. Some of the things that come
out. Yeah. I mean, look, most people are, I think most people are like good actors and just actually don't see a lot of that, but you got to watch out for it. I mean, they're, you know, you never know what you're going to find.
You got to be cautious, the whole way through, you know, and I think with the way that you guys operate, you know, it's especially, you guys be especially careful where you're aligning forces and aligning, you know, a common goal with an existing, you know, with an operator who is going to help you achieve the growth, is going to help you achieve the return on capital. You know, you need to know as much as you can about that person, and you need to know that they are a good actor, and it might take a couple extra steps, you know, other than just Googling their name to figure that out. But at the same time, those steps are, they're everything, you know, and you gotta, and it's crazy. I mean, these things, as you know, I mean, diligence, it's about 60 to 90 days, maybe a little longer sometimes. That's a pretty short, it might feel like forever for both sides, but that's a pretty short amount of time to get to know somebody. And so
it is, I mean, it's, you know, it is. And I do think, it's not a long period of time. I mean, I think ideally you're meeting businesses before they even go to market, and you're kind of getting to know people that way, but that's not always the case. So, you got to do your diligence. I mean, I think there are things you can do. I mean, simple housekeeping stuff like accelerate your background checks, like do that earlier. It doesn't cost a lot. The last thing you want to do is go through all your other diligence, kind of get to the finish line, and then doing background checks as a final item, and something pops up there that's problematic. So there's some things like that. But you know, look, there are elements of this business too, where if someone's truly engaging in fraud, where they're manufacturing like manufacturing data or doing something like you're mentioning with faking a customer. I mean, I've never heard of that. There, it's only so much you can do to protect yourself against some of that stuff. But there are crazy actors out there. So
crazy. Well, look, man, I really appreciate your time. It's been great to get to know you and learn a little bit more about you guys and what you're doing. As I mentioned before, we hopped on here, you know, a decent amount of the audience here might be intermediaries or founders, you know, deal sources. If they, you know, are interested in sending you some opportunities, you know, after they take a look at what you guys are doing, where can they find you?
Yeah, you can go to our website. It's www.nbgroup.us. And you can get our email and contact info from there, and would love to hear from folks and engage and be helpful any way we can.
Beautiful. Awesome. Well, Aries, you've been a pleasure. Thanks for coming on here, and I look forward to, you know, keeping up a relationship here.
Yeah, likewise. Thanks for having me on, Joe.
Thanks.